This is Dr. Patty Shelton, and you are listening to the LongevIQ podcast. We discuss anti-aging and longevity science and how to benefit from it so we can all live long, healthy, happy lives. Just before we get started, a quick medical disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or to provide or replace medical advice. Please use this information to educate yourself as much as possible and share this information with a qualified health practitioner that you trust. In this episode, we'll talk about sugars. Some people say they can't live without them. Others do their best to avoid them. But is there any truth to either of these? Which approach is the best for healthy aging and longevity? Our guest in this episode is Dr. Jalal Akhouri, MD, an anti-aging medicine expert specializing in health optimization by combining modern, traditional, and alternative approaches. As we'll discuss, sugar plays a key role in how we age. And for many people, blood sugar control is the missing link in their journey to better health. In our talk, we'll bring awareness to certain aspects of sugar that not many people know about. Yet these can make a big difference in our health, longevity, and actually our entire life. Also joining us today, as always, is Amir Ginsberg, the founder of LongevIQ. Welcome, Dr. Akhouri. Thanks for joining us today.
Patty and Amir, I'm so excited to be with you. And I am very blessed and honored to be a part of your community and raise the awareness. That's why my clinic name is AwareMed.
Beautiful. Oh, such a good message. Yeah, today we would like to talk about blood sugar control issues, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome. So just share with us your general view of the importance of controlling blood sugar for health and for aging.
Most of us, when we're born, they introduce us immediately to sugar. So as soon as the baby is born, the first thing they give him in the nursery is what we call D5, which is sugar, glucose, water. And there's nothing more addictive on the planet than white sugar, white, anything white. So the first really cocaine that we give a baby starts with that D5W that they get in the nursery. And most of us really have that sweet tooth because of that. So we all think sweet is good. And every time we reward somebody, we reward them with sweet. But is that not ironic to see that everything that ages is sweet? Like ripe banana is aged banana, is an old banana. And that's the sweetest banana. So really, sugar is nothing but decay. We keep talking about sugar as if it's a sweetener and it's something good, and we reward people with decay. We reward them with death. We reward them with sickness. And we need to really ask ourselves, why is it that people initially, years ago, diabetics were on type 2, were mostly elderly people? That really is very close to what we know about ripe banana or a ripe grape or ripe anything. So once you're ripe enough, that's when you start getting all the bacteria and all the fermentation happens from the decay. So we always misunderstood that sweetening is not a reward. That's actually aging. That reward system we're using is really the worst thing we could do for people. Now, diabetes or metabolic syndrome used to be a disease of aging, the disease that happens as you get older. The saddest thing right now is we have metabolic syndrome in teenagers, actually preteens. They already have type 2 diabetes, a disease that only happens when you age, because sugar is higher when you age. You become more rotten as you age. So what happens when we trigger a sugar response in the body? We trigger insulin production. So when we have so much sugar in the body, it causes major damage. So that little sugar knocks on the pancreas and says, hey, I need to do something. All the cells are talking to the pancreas and say, do something for that. What would the pancreas do? Pancreas starts pumping insulin. Now, what does insulin do? Insulin increases lipogenesis. So what does insulin do? Makes you more fat. So really, insulin is the root cause of a lot of diseases, from cancer to obesity to chronic fatigue to inflammation. So the more sugar you increase in the body, the more insulin goes up, the higher the risk for cancer, the higher the risk for obesity. So that's what we're doing. We are making us rot prematurely. How did you like that?
Yeah, that is a very powerful message and a way of thinking about this that a lot of people have probably not really had before. Happy birthday. Here's some death.
I know. I love that. Happy birthday. Oh, you've done a great job. Let me kill you.
Talk about what sugar does in the body. You mentioned sugar causes all kinds of damage. So can you be like a little more specific? Like what happens when our sugar goes up to the body? What's it actually doing in there?
The body likes something called homeostasis. The body wants everything normal. You want a healthy blood sugar level. That means you need to be in the 80 range. And then your blood sugar goes up postprandial as a response to eating. So everything is just perfect. And what we're tempering with is perfection. So when your body is toxic with sugar, look at what's going to happen. It attracts candida, attracts yeast. All diabetics, all the sweet people, what do they have? Candida, yeast infection. If you want to ferment anything, what do you add to it? Sugar and yeast. So when you do sugar, you help things ferment. So what happens when things ferment? What is fermentation? You're feeding bacteria, but you don't feed good bacteria. You may be feeding bad bacteria. So you are promoting yeast, which is a fungus. You're promoting bacteria, and that changes the homeostasis and it changes the microenvironment in the body. So why is sugar important at times? Once you have an adequate amount of sugar, it gets through the cell membrane using insulin that really helps to open the cell membrane for sugar to go in. So the sugar goes into the membrane of the mitochondria and it helps you create energy. It creates what we call ATP. In order for you to really have a higher production of ATP, you need to be able to go through what we call a Krebs cycle. It's like the energy producing thing within the mitochondria. Guess what? Sugar creates a small amount of ATP, and that means laziness. I want to make it easy and clear. So when you have a lot of sugar, insulin allowed the sugar in so that it creates enough ATP or enough gas in order for the whole respiratory chain reaction to happen. Okay? But that's all what it does. In order for the rest to happen, you need to have other things.
And so that everybody understands this, we're talking about respiratory kind of at the cellular level and not breathing into the lungs, but inside of the cell itself, the use of oxygen to make energy. I know that can be a confusing term for people.
That respiration at the cellular level is key to life, is key to energy production. So mitochondria is poisoned by sugar. And mitochondria is the energy unit of every single cell. It's the machine that creates gas. So if you paralyze that machine from creating gas, we call that mitochondriopathy. The mitochondria is not capable to perform its very essential function, which is to create gas. So you need gas. You need healthy mitochondria. And that's really essential. when you eat carbohydrates, you only create 4 calories per gram of sugar, while with a gram of fat, you're creating at least 9 calories. So a gram of sugar is not creating adequate enough of ATP of energy while it's damaging the mitochondria. Healthy fats, like essential fats, like omega-3s and 6, and some 9s in particular, and some good 6s, really are creating the membrane of each cell. That's where all the interactions happen. That cell membrane is made mostly of good fats, especially omega-3s, because they're mobile, they don't harden. So any receptor can come in and talk, and it's transmitted and transmitted to the nucleus where the DNA responds. So you have to have healthy fats, and eating fats is a fuel for the mitochondria. That's why people do more of what we call ketogenic diet, which is fat-based diet. Now, I don't believe in that all the way either. I like modification of that, because too much fat is not good either. And too much omega-3s can tip the balance over again.
You said a few really important things about how sugar affects the mitochondria that I think we want to reinforce and highlight. Too much sugar can cause the mitochondria to become less efficient and produce less energy. Sugar doesn't provide the mitochondria with all of the essential nutrients that they need. Healthy fats do provide essential nutrients that allow the mitochondria to produce more energy. So to have more efficient mitochondria, limiting sugar and getting more healthy fats can be really helpful. And on that note, the key, as always, is balance. And that can change from one person to another.
The key is balance. The key is helping the body to feel good and look good. So yes, sugar is damaging. And then because of the sugar and the inflammation that the sugar causes, we have a marker or an indicator that we're already having damage, which is what we call hemoglobin A1C or the A1C. That is a glycated protein that is, instead of being a normal protein, it becomes glycated, which is the damaged protein. And that's an indicator that we are developing metabolic syndrome. In order for you to be not diabetic or pre-diabetic, your A1C needs to be less than 5.6. If it's between 5.7 to 6.3, you are a pre-diabetic. When it goes above that, you are diabetic. So what my job, your job, our job is to keep people from getting to a hemoglobin A1C above 6. No, I wanted less than 5.7. That's where you can help them. Once you see a 5.7 to 6.3, you can reverse it quicker and have less glycation. Glycation means a protein that is damaged and it deposits in different parts. It can deposit in the brain. We develop dementia. It can deposit in the kidneys. We develop kidney problems. It deposits in the eyes and you have blurry vision and acuity issues. It can deposit in the nerves and you have neuritis, neuropathy. And then the more glycation, the more sugar, the more insulin, the more risk for cancer.
Since we talked about A1C, let's talk about how a person can monitor or test how their body is doing with sugar. And there's a lot of different ways out there, continuous glucose monitors, testing of fasting glucose, A1C. So talk about the different tests that are available and what someone would be looking at to see how their body is actually responding.
You need to become more in tune with your body. A lot of time we think it's what we're eating, but also we forget our stress level. So what happens under stress? Sugar creates a quick energy, very small energy, but quick. During stress, when you had that fight or flight moment, you have to be able to quickly move, okay? You either fight, you need energy, or flight, and you need energy. So in order for you to have energy production that is quick, you're able to degrade the glycogen that is stored in your liver, because all carbohydrates after digestion, whatever is not used, become deposited in the liver as glycogen. In the time of needs, when you are under fight or flight, we create something called gluconeogenesis. You're trying to create sugar very quickly by either creating sugar or by metabolizing your glycogen back into simple sugars, so that insulin can help that simple sugar to get into the cytoplasm of the cell, where before it gets to the mitochondria, it creates enough energy. Does that make sense?
Some people that listen at this point, they're probably going to wonder, how do I know if I even have a sugar problem? Because it seems okay. I don't think I have a problem. You said something really powerful, which is you need to be in tune with your body. How do I actually know if I have a problem? And it doesn't have to be a full-blown diabetes. It can be just small signs of insulin resistance. Don't wait until it's going to get too wild.
Anytime you're overweight, you are insulin resistant. Why is that? Because as we said earlier, if you're eating carbohydrates, you know yourself. If you're eating a lot of carbohydrates, if you're under a lot of stress, you know you have a lot of sugar. That means you have a lot of insulin that needs to be produced. Anytime you produce a lot of insulin, what happens is insulin creates what we call lipogenesis. So insulin helps you deposit more fat. So anytime you're overweight, you are at risk for metabolic syndrome. So then you need to make sure you have your hemoglobin A1C checked. If your A1C is 5.7 or above until 6.3, you are pre-diabetic. You better do something so that you don't get into the diabetes state. This is exactly the same way as we do self-breast examination. Stop cancer from becoming cancer by looking at your body and realizing you are at risk. How are you at risk? Are you under stress? You are at risk. Are you overweight? You are at risk. Do you have wounds that don't get better quicker? You are at risk. Do you have lots of yeast infections? Guess what? You are at risk. Why? We said sugar attracts yeast. You're too acidotic, they do a blood gas, or you check your pH and you see you're too acidic. Guess what? You are at risk. You have skin problems. You have skin wounds that don't get better. You have infections that don't go away. We talked about sugar attracting infections, bacteria, fermentation. Do you have neuropathy, feeling your nerves are doing like this? You have erectile dysfunction. You have hormonal imbalances. Each one of these can indicate you are at risk for metabolic syndrome. PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, in women who have fertility issues, can indicate that they have insulin resistance. So then you ask your doctor to check your blood sugar. Now you can even have apps that helps you check your blood sugar on a regular basis. You have ways to know if your sugar is 90 or above, you have to be a little bit more careful. Then you may want a hemoglobin A1C done. It has to be 5.7 or less. Or you have to ask your doctor to even check your insulin level. It may be a problem. If your insulin is greater than 17, that means you are producing a lot more insulin. You're becoming resistant. Resistant means like it needs a lot more insulin in order for the cell membrane to allow sugar in. So you are becoming insulin resistant. So a lot of things can indicate that you are at risk. Your blood pressure is up. Think insulin resistance, make sure, because cardiovascular issues are indication of heart disease. When we talked about erectile dysfunction for men, what is erectile dysfunction? It's a cardiovascular dysfunction. It's heart dysfunction. What causes heart dysfunction? Too much sugar makes that happen. So these are things that really can make you the suspicion of this. Now, there's genetic testing to see if you have any methylation issue or anything that really puts you at a higher risk to become insulin resistant. A lot of good, reasonable genetic testing and genes that you look for. Looking at the mitochondria, there's genes that helps us to understand what's happening at the mitochondrial level.
How often do you recommend that people do some of this testing? Like, how often should they check a blood glucose? How often do you think an A1C is warranted? Or do you base it just on people's symptoms and only test if you see signs of a problem? What do you recommend?
Prevention is better than cure. You don't have to have continuous blood sugar monitor, but just check yourself and check maybe once or twice. If you're overweight, you have to think pre-diabetic. You have to. If you're having fatigue, you have to think pre-diabetic. If you're under stress, so what do you do then? Then you ask your doctor to check your A1C. Not only should you wait for that, but you start changing your lifestyle. You start understanding that sugar is toxic. You have to start understanding that sugar is the death sentence, okay? And you need to start understanding that sugar is not only coming from food, it can come from stress. And sugar can come from food that is already rotten. Rotten food is sweet. Already you're creating a sugar overload. You don't want a sugar overload. So you want to make sure that you start thinking, what am I eating? And am I eating too many fruits either? You have to be mindful even with fruits. You only take 3 servings of fruit at maximum a day. And especially if the fruits are high in glycemic index. What is glycemic index? When you eat them, they turn into sugar very fast. So you have to be a little bit mindful of this. The other thing that you have to be mindful of, you think stevia is safe. Stevia is probably one of the safest, but even stevia is not safe. You can gain weight on stevia. Why? Because stevia gives you the same feeling, the same taste. So the message that goes to the brain then goes to the pancreas, say, there's a lot of sweetness here. So you may create more insulin, even on stevia. When you create more insulin, you're going to gain weight.
Important to think about that with the artificial sweeteners. Anything that tastes sweet, even if it doesn't spike your blood sugar, if it makes your body think it's going to, then you're going to end up with some insulin from that. And you're almost training the body to become insulin resistant by secreting insulin, and then there's no sugar. So you're teaching your cells to ignore the insulin signal.
And that's such an important takeaway. We hear from so many people who use sweeteners daily, and they notice they develop a sweet tooth. After a while, their meals or smoothies don't taste as sweet anymore unless they add more and more sweeteners. So just like you said, even with natural sweeteners like stevia, we do need to be mindful of how they make us feel. I mean, these things are natural and can be very helpful, better than sugar, but they're still isolated extract. They're like hundreds of times sweeter than sugar.
One more thing that is very important. I want to say, I believe in God, okay? Doesn't have to be everybody believe in God. I respect everyone whatever faith they have. However, when you talk about nature, whether it's you want to call it God or the universe, anything that comes together and you isolate it, it becomes dangerous, okay? If you eat a plant, any plant, it has a lot of phytonutrients and they work together in a combination to create a symphony that makes things work beautifully together. And when you isolate a piece, like even when people started isolating CBD or THC, and I don't want to take us away, the whole plant effect is so much different than isolation of any single thing. Because as you said, Amir, it really concentrates. It concentrates this thing 100 times and your body does not need it that way. It needed to be beautifully together in a symphony so it works together in a beautiful way. So when we isolate even monk fruit, if we isolate even stevia, we're removing every other phytochemical and we're just keeping one. There is no richness in one. The richness is in the whole. So eating a whole food, raw food, less processed food means you are eating the whole. And the whole is so beautiful and it's just so important for healing. There's a conversation that happened between our body, our DNA, and the environment through what we eat. It's a conversation. It's a dialogue. it turns on certain genes and turns off certain genes. So insulin resistance is happening because we turn on genes to produce more insulin or to produce more things because we need them. So we are manipulating everything every day.
Earlier, you mentioned about the ketogenic diet. So maybe talk a little bit about how that eating plan might impact the body and the body's sensitivity to insulin and sugar.
Again, even with ketogenic, it scares me because we are isolating things, okay? Your genes are determined by your parents and are determined by the environment you were born in. So a person from Alaska can eat a lot more fat, a lot more fish than we can because they're genetically made for that. So even when we transplant people from Alaska or we transplant us to Alaska, the food that works for Alaskan is different than what we have. So we have to pay attention to several things when we're eating. One is to know our ancestors. Where are we coming from? So if you're Mediterranean, you cannot really eat the food that people from colder places can eat, okay? So you have to be able to eat food that matches your genetic makeup. Why? Because the genes are working in accordance with your environment. So the genes that are already turned on in you may be different than what was turned on in me, and so forth. So we need to really at least be mindful of our ancestry or our genetic makeup. Second, we need to be more mindful of the season, because seasonal food, the body is preparing for the next season. So what I'm eating in the fall helps me to prepare for the winter, and what I'm eating in the summer helps me to prepare me for the fall, and so forth. So really being mindful of seasonal food is very important. Being mindful of the genetic makeup is very important. And the more we eat as our ancestors, which is really paleo diet, is way more reasonable for me. And it's more a whole food diet. And it's not isolating sugar either. It's just more whole food. Once we eat just meat or fat, doesn't matter where we're coming from, we're creating artificial environment. It's not what the body needs. That's why I like modified keto diet. And I like to do keto diet extremely carefully. I use it for certain people with seizure disorders, people who have to help their mitochondria to be a little bit better because ketogenic helps the mitochondria. And mitochondrial health is what we talked about, Amir, about longevity. A healthy mitochondria is very important for longevity purposes, for a lot of other things like that. We're here to maintain the beauty of humanity and living way longer than we used to. So now we have to be mindful of what we're doing and eating and drinking.
How do you feel about intermittent fasting? Do you feel like that's beneficial for insulin and blood sugar?
I love intermittent fasting, but again, everything has to really mean something. Every religion, every faith on the planet use fasting. And now, fasting is not only detoxing your spirit, but it also detoxes the body. So fasting in general is time of rest for the gut, where the gut can heal and the body can heal. And you can't keep the body working 24/7. You can't. And every time you eat or chew on anything, you're continuously using all the genes. You're confusing the body from healing. You need to give time for the gut to heal. Now, what is break the fast? Breakfast is the word break the fast. Usually, most people should eat at 6 p.m., last meal, 5, 6 p.m., walk a tiny bit, and then the next meal is break the fast. So from 6 to 8 o'clock the next day, that's 14 hours, right? That's the breaking the fast. Some people do 16, some people do 18. You have to be very careful. And that does not give you permission to eat anything you want during the 6 hours of no fasting. So the word intermittent fasting without any connotation with it may not mean that you're healing. Just because you're intermittent fasting and eating the wrong things afterward is not really helping you. We have to break the fast. I would recommend if we eat the last meal about 6 p.m., then we give the gut rest. And then we have fasting intermittently for holidays. That for all the religions, those are good fasting. So those are called intermittent fasting. And most religions would have at least one day a week where you're fasting. That's real fast. That really resets the system. Intermittent fasting, if it's not done correctly, can cause damage. Water fasting can cause a lot of damage if you're toxic. You have to be very careful when you do that.
One day a week, is that something that you'd recommend most people do? Try to fast one day a week?
Even 2 or 3 days a week if you want to, intermittent fasting. But also be mindful. Anything you do on a regular basis, 24/7, you have to cycle everything. What do you think, Amir?
I think you mentioned something that is huge, which is cycling fasting. And this is super important for people to consider because there's a lot of trendy, time-restrictive eating patterns, 1 meal a day, 16-8, etc. And you said it in one of our previous discussions, the body gets used to it. It's not creating that effect. It may create a bit of stress. I think it's a huge key takeaway for people to recognize that maybe cycling makes things a little bit more confusing for the body. It's actually good. The variety is the spice of life, right? It turns out it holds also a health and wellness sort of wisdom into it.
You're correct. The wisdom of all the ancestors, wisdom of all religions. There's wisdom, and we have ignored that wisdom, and we're thinking we know better. And when we talk about intermittent fasting, we don't think about the quality of food at times. So just because it's intermittent fasting, that does not mean I can eat sugar for 6 hours straight, eat fat for 6 hours straight. It just means eating healthier, be more conscious, and give rest to your bowel, and give time for the bowel to heal and start doing the jobs. If we're doing it naturally, if we really doing it the way that we were trained to do it by our ancestors, that's why paleo is a good thing. Definitely cycling, intermittent fasting is very important to restore and reset insulin resistance.
And when you say fasting, are you referring to not eating at all? Are you referring to maybe eating a little bit less or eating differently than how you normally would eat? Like, what does fasting mean there?
Fasting means you don't eat for 12 or 16 hours. We're supposed to eat the last big meal at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. at the most. Now, guess what? Majority of us eat the last meal at 9 p.m. 8 p.m. We all go out to dinner with meetings and conferences. So most of our meals are at 9 p.m. So then now you have to wait 12 hours in order for food to be digested, for the cleansing of the gut, for energy restoration. Let me give you an example. If you are having a kitchen and you have the kitchen working 24/7, what would happen? You'll run out of everything. The kitchen has to have washing the dishes. All that is part of the whole thing in the body. We have time for washing the gut. We have time for resting the gut. We have to replenish the gut. We have to replenish the cells. There's a lot that is happening at night. So intermittent fasting is really important. We're doing it anyway, if we're eating correctly. But the word fasting, 16 hours and 8, or 14 hours and 10, or whatever, means absolutely nothing. What do you do during that 8 hour? Right? What are you eating? Are you eating proteins? Are you eating sugars? Are you eating balanced meal? Are you eating what your body needs? It's not just open buffet from 8 to 6. During those 8 hours, it's not an open buffet to eat what you want. You have to really think, I have to be mindful of sugars. I have to be mindful of simple carbohydrates. I have to be mindful of gluten. You still have to maintain the whole thing. Eat more whole food. Eat more according to your type, your genetic makeup. Just still eat healthy.
Would you ever recommend that people go a whole day without eating, even more than a day perhaps? Or would you normally just go with intermittent fasting, so we're leaving periods where we're not eating?
You can't live without water for too long. You really can't. When dehydration happens, you're a disaster. So we need to make sure, even if we fast, that you have time where you drink at least. Even if you're fasting for a day, you could do that. It's a cleansing, it's healing, it's all. But if you do it for a very long time and you don't replenish, it's not okay. You have to make sure you drink enough water. Anything that was done in the past is still good. So you can have a whole day where you don't eat, but you don't stay more than 24 hours without eating. But some people, if they do that, they have to at least drink. Otherwise, you're going to have a complete shutdown. Because when you dehydrate, it affects your kidneys. It affects your blood pressure. It affects your brain functions. So you really have to at least drink. Fasting without anything, I would not even do it for 24 hours, at least for the hydration.
So at least the fluids. Beautiful. How do you feel about coffee and blood sugar control? The face that you made was interesting. Yeah, so talk to us about coffee and metabolic health.
A lot of controversy. I love coffee, but I don't drink it anymore. I do drink it sometimes. It's good to do things sometimes, even if it's the wrong thing sometimes, because the body has to be able to raise its immunity or his power to deal with different things. But I love coffee. I love the aroma of coffee. But coffee, unless you get the very best coffee, you put yourself at risk for aflatoxins and a lot of toxic things. The more you burn the coffee, the darker the coffee is, the worse the coffee is. If you don't have organic coffee that is void of aflatoxins and void of fungi, you destroy that liver. So you really want to be mindful. Now, if I would do coffee, I would use coffee beans, grind them freshly before I eat them. Coffee has oils and they get oxidized. They become rancid. Oxidation is rancidity. So coffee that is rancid is very dangerous, cause more inflammation in the body. So as much as coffee is antioxidant, if your coffee is already in a powder form and you leave it on the shelf for a day or two, if I have coffee, I'll put it in the refrigerator and I freeze most of the coffee beans. The more organic coffee beans that comes from less roasting, like greener, the lighter, the better off they are. And then if you want to drink it, just grind it as you go. Keep it refrigerated, sealed. Same thing as flaxseed. Flaxseed oil can get oxidized and it would be as dangerous as anything else, because a polyunsaturated fat becomes saturated fat and you think it's not dangerous because it's flaxseed oil. It's not. It is as dangerous because it's oxidized.
What about the impact of coffee on blood sugar?
There is controversy on that. Some studies show that it increases insulin resistance and some studies that shows it doesn't. So I really think there's controversial. In general, I would think it would increase insulin resistance. It increases insulin production. Now, it causes problem if you have also additional sugar. So really, it depends. If we want to talk about what we call toxic load. If your toxic load is this much and you have a big vase that can tolerate, this capacity is 2 liters or 5 liters, and you have this much toxin in it, you can add more with no problem. But if you have a toxic load that is overflowing and you just give a tiny bit of coffee right now, it may overflow. But your body is capable of detoxing beautifully if you are cycling, like we're doing things the right way.
I think with coffee, you just nail it. Not only quality matters, but also it's highly personalized. A lot of people that are doing fasting and keto, for them, that just one little cup of coffee in the morning makes it doable, makes them happy and hungry. They don't need to go through all these little snacking and they feel great. However, some individuals, coffee can make them anxious or causing them more stress. I think there's a lot of individual response when it comes to coffee. And it is one of the most highly consumed stimulant in the world or in the US.
Coffee in itself really could have antioxidant. And they can be helping with dementia. And they have really good things. You have to be very careful with everything else. Right now, if people have coffee from beans, it's fine. But look at all those pods right now. These are nothing but toxins.
Putting hot water through plastic. Bad idea. I mean,
and people pay a lot of money for these. If I have to drink coffee, I get it from coffee beans and good sources of coffee beans and organic coffee beans. And if anything has to be organic and has to be clear of aflatoxin, it will be coffee.
Do you feel like there are any supplements that are helpful for people to maintain their metabolic health? Do you recommend any supplements or mainly changing how and when you eat?
You're beautiful. Okay. Alpha lipoic acid is very helpful. ALA is really good. Chromium is wonderful. Chromium picolinate really helps. Berberine is another really good thing to help protect us. Cinnamon is incredible. Fenugreek is really good to help stabilize sugar and stabilize insulin production. Bitter melon is really a good thing. Some B vitamins are really good because they help with fat storage. And eating whole proteins are really good.
Are those supplements that you recommend to everybody, or is that something that if somebody starts to have some issues with the blood sugar?
I recommend them all the time. When they do cinnamon bun, why do you think they have cinnamon in it? Why do you think the Greeks have cinnamon in the baklava? Lebanese and Egyptians don't put much cinnamon in the baklava. Why do you think cinnamon is in sweeteners, in sweet stuff? It helps the body deal with sugar. My grandbaby, he's only 4 years old, and I taught him to love cinnamon. So I give him cinnamon sticks and I made him do cinnamon sticks stuff.
I'm blown away because you have to appreciate the wisdom of our ancestors in all these ancient cultures. How do they even know to combine cinnamon with all these sweet beverages or foods? And there's so many examples of that. They actually knew it way before science was there to say, oh yeah, cinnamon helps regulate blood sugar.
Because that's the wisdom that I told you that is innate wisdom. We're born with that wisdom.
A good reminder too, that the things that are good for us can be things that are delightful and joyful. It doesn't have to be a process of depriving ourselves of things. Cinnamon is wonderful.
So your job at home is to train your children to develop a tooth for the stuff that is good for them. As Amir said, our ancestor knew what's right. And if you go to any ethnic group, you'll see that the elderly of those ethnic group knew everything and they did not communicate and they're from different continents. So the wisdom that we talked about, you and I, when we started, is the universal knowledge that we can tap into. The only way we can do that is we become attuned and align spirit, mind, and body together so that everything works beautifully and understand the language and the dance and the musical between the environment and our gene, so we can all not only survive, but thrive.
Beautiful, beautiful message. We were hoping also that you might be willing to share maybe a favorite recipe or a smoothie that perhaps you recommend people make that would really help people support their metabolic health and something that's also really nice to consume.
Okay. So number one, I really appreciate you for asking me. You're putting me on the spot because I didn't have anything prepared, but I will tell you. So I do smoothies. I use a lot of times nuts and seeds as a base for everything, because not only are they rich in proteins, but they're also very rich in different oils that are very good for us. So I can put some macadamia nuts, maybe half a tablespoon of macadamia nuts, have a tablespoon of sunflower seeds, and then 16 ounces of water. In that, I would put half a stick of cinnamon, and I will put whatever else I want. I can put a little bit of blueberries, maybe half a cup of blueberries, 1/4 of a cup of raspberries, because they have a lot of great things, a little bit of spinach, and then maybe a drop of stevia if you want to or don't. And then you make a beautiful shake. It has the cinnamon, it has the greens, it has the nuts with the oils that are very helpful. That's how you make the milk. You can make milk from the sunflower seeds. You can make milk from the macadamia nuts. I sometimes like to put a tiny bit of a tree from Africa that has an incredible amount of all the vitamins and everything, moringa. tablespoon of moringa with that. And it really tastes like cannabis. But I have never tasted cannabis.
I heard that there's a lot of evidence on moringa and blood sugar control.
Absolutely. Yes.
And we've talked so much about food, but what about other lifestyle impacts on blood sugar? So exercise.
Oh, exercise is key, especially aerobic exercise, walking, swimming, anaerobic yoga. Those are very good. Meditation, because it really helps the cortisol to go down and the insulin to go down and restore that sugar balance. Stress causes sugar. You don't have to eat sugar to have metabolic syndrome. That's what most people don't understand. I don't eat. Yeah, but you stress and you have so much sugar. So you have so much insulin. So if you have so much insulin, you have lipogenesis.
So controlling stress, that's a whole kind of topic on its own, but really important to think about with blood sugar if you're having blood sugar issues.
Stress reduction, sleep. If you don't sleep, you're going to have high sugar, because your cortisol level is going to be up.
All of these things, really important to think about.
A lot of people notice that when they start to measure their blood glucose levels in the morning, they see a correlation. I mean, this is anecdotal evidence, but if they've been under a lot of stress, regardless of what they eat, they see that their fasting glucose levels are high.
Fasting sugar is going to be high.
Yeah. And so if they're not aware of that, they're going to start to go back to the diet. Oh, maybe I should not eat this. But in fact, like you said, it's just the stress.
And that's one thing I always talk about, the stress and the effect of stress for survivorship and the power of the fight and flight response we have. Because we want to be beyond that survivorship. We want to be in a thrivership mode, which we really are not. Some of us who are conscious are, and I try to be as conscious as I can.
Amir, did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask?
There's this one super popular topic that seems to confuse everyone, and it's a term called skinny fat. So we mentioned that obesity is definitely a risk factor for metabolic syndrome. However, a lot of people may be normal weight, even low body weight, but they may still have insulin resistance, and they're not even aware of it. And for those listeners who haven't heard of this term, skinny fat, what it means is that you have a normal body weight or BMI, but your body composition is off. So you may have high percentage of body fat and a low amount of muscle mass.
You can look skinny, but you are already having metabolic dysfunction because your blood sugar is up. See, once you get insulin resistance, what does the insulin resistance mean? That you have to produce a whole lot more insulin to help sugar penetrate cell membrane or sensitize the cell membrane to sugar, right? When you're insulin resistant, you're going to result into pancreatic failure. When pancreas fails, you're not making any more insulin. When you're not making insulin, you're not going to be storing fat. So you may have metabolic syndrome, and you may even be diabetic. And actually, you start losing weight because you're not making insulin anymore.
So how does a person that, let's say they're in healthy weight, et cetera, and they still have insulin resistance, are there any signs they can be aware of, or are there any tests?
If they have insulin resistance, that from checking their insulin level, okay, the insulin level being too low, too much lower than 17 or too much higher than 17 is a problem. The second thing that is really important, if their hemoglobin A1C is up, they already are metabolic syndrome. So they can start cinnamon. They can start stress reduction. They can sleep more. They can start exercising. They can start getting a fenugreek. They can start eating better. Once you have metabolic syndrome, whether you're skinny metabolic syndrome or fat metabolic syndrome, that means your pancreas is done.
Another key takeaway for people, and there's a lot of talks in that too, is how much sugar I actually need. Is it an essential nutrient? And you alluded into that. You really need essential fats. The body cannot make those things, but the body can make sugars from other things.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's not essential. Sugar is the sign of decay. Sugar is sign of aging. So you nailed it in the beginning. You said longevity and sugar. I tell you, everything that is old has sugar.
That's a perfect message to end on. Just make sure everybody keeps that in mind. Things that are old have sugar.
If you're too sweet, you're too old.
Thank you so much, Dr. Curry, for being here and for sharing so much wisdom and knowledge with everybody. Really a lot for a lot of people to think about out there.
We can do a lot to help people. Sugar and diabetes is very expensive and it causes lives. It causes cancer. It causes strokes. It causes heart diseases. It causes anguish and it ages us. It's a decaying to our system. So let's not be that sweet.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it so much.